This question of the permission to eat outside of the sukkah when it's achilas aroi, or to drink. So we started to discuss yesterday that it seems like there is a subtle machlokas harishonim as to what exactly is the reason for that. Why is it that not everything has to be eaten in the sukkah? So here, this seems to be a topic which the Rishonim have a slight difference on, which could be significant, because we saw that the Ritva, it's also the view of the Ramban, understands that Teshu Kein Taduru means that the way people normally live, that's the way they treat their houses, so too they should treat their sukkahs the same way. So if there is something which they would do outside the house, because it doesn't require the kviyas of the house, so then they could do that outside of the sukkah as well. While the Ran's language was somewhat different, and the Ran's language was that which is aroi is not chashuv or chashiva, and therefore it doesn't enter into the category of teshu ke'in taduru. So the idea apparently being that it's not that teshu ke'in taduru, at least for these purposes, is telling us just whatever you do in the house, you do in the sukkah, and vice versa as well, but that dira is chashivas, dira is something that has some significance to it, and what is on that level you do in the sukkah, and what isn't, isn't. So these have some ramifications, as we started to discuss yesterday. It's interesting, by now you have seen the Marach or Zeruah, we sent that around today. So what does the Marach or Zeruah say? It's an interesting perspective. What does he say? Someone help me out. That the implication of Teshu Kein Taduru is that what? That if someone... Yeah, sorry? Okay. It's in both directions. Right. So when it comes to eating also... Oh, that's an important point I want to get to as well. Right, there are two things you're saying. One is that this could apply to eating also and things like that, that even if there are foods that you would normally eat outside the sukkah, so and even if they might otherwise seem theistic, nonetheless, on sukkahs also, if they're outside the household, so you can eat those outside the sukkah as well. Which, what the implications of that are, we're not fully sure. It doesn't seem to be that this is really the view that's accepted as far as our practice is concerned. But it opens up an interesting question about what exactly would be in that category. And now what Moshe's point is crucial as well, that there's another difference that the Marach or Zeruah enters into the discussion, and that's the question of subjectivity. Because it's clear from what he says that it's not just about what one would do in the sukkah, it's about what one would do in the house to do that in the sukkah, it's about what you would do. Right? So this is not just a rule of thumb for how we know what people do inside sukkahs and outside sukkahs. It goes to your behavior. How do we know that he's talking very specifically from his language? Because he quotes the Gemara in Daf Yud that we saw the other day about Osek Mitzvah Patim and a Mitzvah. So there, just if you recall, the language of the Gemara there is, just to see it again on Yudim Beis, that says, Rav Chista, Rabbi Rav Huna, Iklo, Leber Shkulusa, Agninu, Rav Nachim, Yisukah, Shemaya, Muflagim, and Arba Tfachim, Ishtik, Lomidu, Lomidi, Amalu, Hadar, Rav Shmasai, Yamalai, Aran, Shluche, Mitzvah, Nan, Uchturim, and Asukah. So the only answer they seem to be able to give why they're not worried about a potential soul of the sukkah has to do with the fact that they were osik b'mitzvah, that fact that they were on this mitzvah mission. So I asked the Oz Aruah, it's not such an obvious question, but the fact that he asks the question and the answer that he gives is very instructive about what his position here is. He says, why didn't they say that, oh, this type of activity we normally do at home outside the sukkah. We normally camp outside. Why wasn't that the answer that they gave? So apparently, because for them, that's not what they did. So therefore, they only had the answer of osek b'mitzvah patim and a mitzvah. but it seems like from his language that it's really all based on what you personally do. If you would do this activity outside the house, then you do it outside the sukkah and vice versa, and that's very significant. So it seems like the Marach or Zeruah is really a third shita, right? We have basically three opinions. Either we say like the Ran, that it's all about chashivas, whatever is significant enough to reach the threshold of Teshu Kein Taduru. Or we say like the Ritva, that it's all based on what people generally do in a house or outside a house. And the Marach or Zeruah says more specifically about what you do, which is a very interesting distinction.
Is
he a Rishon? Yes, sir.
So if we said it was by general?
So that's what it just sounds like in every other source. That I don't know if it's spelled out so explicitly, but that's what it seems to be, the way the Ritva is saying and the Ramban is saying. And in general, when we talk about this topic, that's always the impression I think you have from every other source, that people do this in the house, so this is not something, this is something you should do in the sukkah. People do this outside, this is something you could do outside. Like we mentioned yesterday, that some of the details, which we'll repeat in a moment, also seem to be measured by that rubric. Yes, sir?
Doesn't it say that the Mamluk is coming in Eliezer about how many meals to eat? Mm-hmm. Based on personal, like how you say, goes based on what you want to do. Mr. Eliezer seems to get more general person. People normally eat 2 meals a day, therefore you have an obligation to eat 2 meals. We possibly the chamim that it goes by the personal rather than the general.
It's interesting. I don't know if that's what Ibo Yachal means, though. I think the way I would normally understand that is that it means that the nature of people is that they have an option whether to eat or not. So they don't have a required, just like the average person is not required to eat on a regular day, so too sukkah does not require you midin sukkah to do that. I didn't read that to mean that you have to see where you fit in. If you're the one who eats, then you're chayav to eat. If you want to, because then that's actually what it would mean, right? It would mean that if you choose to eat, you should eat in the sukkah. So presumably what the Gemara means is that just like in general, eating is optional. So too, sukkah does not, eating a meal is optional. So you have to survive, but the type of eating bekvias is optional. So too, the sukkah is not machayev such behavior. Hi, you. That's where you're raising your hand.
Me.
So I thought you were raising your hand. So, okay, it's all kinds of things that look like hand raising right now. All right, so keeps things interesting. So. This Marach or Zeruah is very interesting. And there are a few other questions that could revolve around these different positions, maybe these three positions, as to how to assess things. So what else do you think might be affected by this question? What else is maybe subject to this? Jed?
14 Syria.
Okay, so the 14 sugyas is relevant, and that I'm going to leave till next time because it's its whole sugya of itself. I don't think it's actually directly talking on this. I think we're going to find a lot of overlapping ideas, so we'll segue from one to the other. But what else may impact this question? So part of what we started to see yesterday, let's say, for example, in terms of shtia. So it sounds like from the Shulchan Aruch, that Meikar Adin is a difference between the Din and what's Meshubach, but Meikar Adin, one is not obligated to drink anything essentially in the Sukkah, because he mentions water and wine. So the question comes up, as Mishnah Berurah asks, that if wine is not Keva type of drinking, so then what is? But something is, because Shulchan Aruch says that we eat and drink and be merry in the sukkah. So something we have to drink in the sukkah. But all drinking is in this category. I mean, not all drinking explicitly, but with water and wine, which pretty much runs the spectrum, you would think, are all in the category of you can eat that outside the sukkah, you can drink that outside the sukkah, so what's left? So what possibilities are there? Okay, so what may be shtia that's in the middle of the meal?
Yeah.
Right, that's essentially a suffix in the Mishnah Berurah, that maybe that should count. But what else? What other possibilities could there be? Yes, Sammy.
If you were to start to define a shtia by sviya,
then you could say that it's not considered nachila at all because you didn't eat enough to, or I'm sorry, drink enough to be satiated, so therefore you're having nachila, why would you just intuitively would think that it's arai, so I probably shouldn't have a sugar with law.
What's the case that you're saying? Now, the point you're raising, by the way, is an important point because whether svia is a factor here is interesting because svia is a factor for benching daraisa. So what's the overlap between the shear that's required to bench and the shear that requires a sukkah? Are they the same or are they not the same? So in the context of benching, that's what we use, the halta, the savata. In the context of sukkah, we don't find that word. Is there a chiluk? Rav Asher Weiss talks about this in his sefer here. There's a discussion actually about this point. You could take a look if you have your Menchas Asher on the Wadim with you. But he actually makes Sammy's point, or he quotes this issue. The question is essentially, what about peros? Are peros ever considered to be enough to be keva? So the Rambam in Hilchos Sukkah writes that peros you're never chayiv in sukkah for. That's also the opinion of the Rush. I don't think I gave you this. I gave you the Rush. You looked at the Rush. So the Rush is the opinion like this that peros is never keva. But the Ramban is of the opinion that having enough peros, if you have peros in a kviyistic way, that you would be chayiv in the sukkah. So the question is that the Gemara Maseches Yuma, which I also gave you to look at, so there is a machlokas in terms of whether you bench on the Shiva Saminin if you eat Derech Keva. So the Mishkanas Yaakov has a discussion about this and raises the issue, as Rosh Weiss discusses here. So are we possibly using two different standards here? Is benching one thing and Sukkah another thing? Seems a little forced, a little dacha. But it's an interesting topic to bring up. So what else? Can you imagine how else could liquids
answer into the question?
Yes, it's wrong.
The difference about whether you're using it during your meal or just as sound drink.
Okay, I think that was mentioned already, right? That was what Moshe said. Is there any other possibility?
Rishon's almonds.
I suppose Rishon's almonds chumra.
If you're outside of your sukkah and you're drinking, so you should go inside of the sukkah.
Meaning you're immediately you're adjacent to your
right,
sukkah.
Yeah, your sukkah, right there.
Right, so if you're adjacent to the sukkah, so the assumption being that, people who were adjacent to their houses would just go into the house. And it's one thing if they're on the road, they'll take a drink. But if their house is right there, then maybe they would go right into the house. So too, you should be chayiv to go into the sukkah. As we mentioned yesterday also, it's a little bit subjective how exactly you decide that, because I could have thought that there are people, certainly nowadays, who drink on the porch, who don't necessarily go into their houses, even when their houses are a foot away. So I don't know exactly where you draw the line. And here again, this brings up the question of Marach or Zarua, should that be the standard, that what do you do, as opposed to what do people do? There really is a very significant difference between a subjective standard and an objective standard, right? Because a subjective standard is basically saying that your kviyas, you should be doing in the sukkah. But if it's for you, it's arai, then don't. While the other Rishonim are really saying that this is essentially a question of a definition, that things that people do in a theistic fashion, that's where the sukkah comes in. Was you had a question?
Maybe different than what I said the first one. The first idea that shtia is a part of the suda that's together.
Mm-hmm.
That the wine could be in and of itself a big part of the meal. Something like wine and cheese.
Okay.
So that make it keva.
Right, but that presumably is like a kal v'chomer, because even if it was a small part of the meal, you take that further in terms of it's a suffix. In a suffix, in the Mishnah Berurah, you say here, if it's a big part, if you advertise, come from wine and cheese,
right,
then all the more so it's kavur. Okay, but what about, let's say, stop without that. Let's say you get together for a few beers. You have people who get together and circle around some drinks, and that's the whole activity. So setting aside whether that's recommended activity or not, perm notwithstanding, but is that kviyas? What do you think?
Someone said that I forget who it was, someone said that if you have a chavura, that would be considered a kriyas.
So the later poskim, it sounds like that. In the Ramah, it sounds not like that. The Ramah sounds that it's always not going to be a chiyuv. But the later poskim didn't seem to accept that view. And they assume more that the whole nature of the get-together is to have a drink together, is a bunch of guys getting around to have some beers, so then maybe that should be considered to be a kvias. So, what else? Any other situations you can think of that would be affected by this? So, first, let's assume, like we saw yesterday, that maybe this all ties into the earlier question we showed of how we define our terms. There is a very hard to guess, this is not the kind of thing you would have come up with on your own, but there is an interesting position of the Shulchan Aruch Harav. Who wrote the Shulchan Aruch Harav?
Balatanya.
Balatanya, yes. Maybe one day we'll come out with the Rosalvechik Shulchan Aruch and we'll call it Shulchan Aruch Harav. And maybe one day Merkaz Harav will come out with the Rav Kook Shulchan Aruch. But Lubavitchers beat us all to it. And so they got to call their Sefer Shulchan Aruch Harav. You would think that the title Shulchan Aruch was already taken. But so in the Shulchan Aruch Harav, he has a very interesting position. He says, there is, on Yontif itself, of Sukkos, so there is a confluence of standards. Because, let's say, the first night of Sukkos, so the mitzvah to eat in the Sukkah requires a kezayis. And that's derived from the Gezeirah Shava to Pesach, Tezvav, Tezvav. So just like you have to have a kezayis of matzah on Pesach night, so too a kezayis of bread in the sukkah's name. But Yantif Suda requires more. Requires what we call a kibetza. So that being the case, so should we say that, okay, midine sukkah, you're required to have a kezayis. Midin Yantif, you have to keep going and have more to have the size of a kibetza. But the difference between a kezayis and a kibetza does not itself rate a shear of kvias. So says the Shulchan Aruch Harav, that extra few bites, that you can go into the house for. Which is a little bit awkward kind of meal. I don't know how practical this is. But that was his position. It doesn't sound like that from Mishnah Berurah and from others. So some suggest that this is a part of this whole discussion as well. That are we looking at the food itself and saying, okay, this is something that just doesn't make the measurement, so therefore it's not chashuv? Or should we say that in the context in which it's done, so this is a part of kviyas? And therefore, it doesn't make sense. Once a person is already eating their yontif meal, they're going to keep going and have as much as they need. So that should all be considered keva as far as sukkah is concerned. And that should be an obligation. Hi.
Sorry, I still understand what that, how that bears in the conversation. Like, if we're saying we have an extra few bites so you can go into the house, like, we would say that for a kezayis of bread and sukkah also, but like, you're not taking those extra few bites, and you would consider yourself as if you can go into the house. Same concept. Right?
Well, what do you mean by that? I mean,
no, I just don't, like, I don't totally understand like what's
the extra few bites. The Shulchan Aruch Harav's point, which again, it's like hard to imagine, is that those extra bites beyond the first kezayis, if you subtract the kezayis from the kibetza, so you don't have a shear for the sukkah. So if you just look at that eating that you're now choosing to do, so okay, I need a few extra bites for yantif purposes, so maybe you would say, okay, those bites, they don't add up to a shear of kviyas. But the question is that a legitimate way to look at it? Do you look at it just as what it is by itself? Or do you say that, no, this is something that you're going to do in the context of your eating, and therefore it's not something you can separate.
What's the difference between kviyas and kashrus?
So it seems like it depends on who you agree with, that it's the Ran really who's giving it the Chashivas definition and understanding the difference between Aroi as a lack of Chashivas, and others might not understand it that way. Others might understand it just in terms of what do you do more in more of an established way.
They sound very mean, but two ideas sound very similar.
Right, so it seems like, at least for the Ran, they are essentially similar. But that the other is shown in Macy, it's more just a question of what do you sit down for, etc. So it's interesting also that, so that's itself a discussion. And here, I didn't give you this to look at yet, but they're just take a look quickly. So the idea, the Gemara on Chav Ches and the Beis, I don't know if anyone had a chance to see that yet, but the Gemara talks about whether you have to learn the sukkah or not. And there, the question is, maybe we should divide it up between different types of learning. That maybe basic bakiyas, to get the material down, that you could do in the sukkah. And learning bi'iyun, so that's something which you can do outside the sukkah. So that's what the Gemara mentions, the bottom of Chav Ches and Beis. So here there is an interesting machlokas harishonim. It's really the last line of Chav Ches and Beis, habi migras habi yune. The last line of Chav Ches and Beis makes this distinction. But if you look at Rashi, so Rashi before that, right before that, in other words, bar mitulasa outside of the sukkah, Rashi writes, in Mirza, if a person wants to learn bi'ya and outside the sukkah, he's allowed to, demitztarehu, because it's too difficult to think that hard when you're inside the sukkah. Umitztar patim in a sukkah. V'ha'avir yafilo l'harchiv daito. The outside, you get to walk around outside, the air is better for you. So, if that's the understanding, so then it seems like the tour is based on mitzvah. And if you say that it's something else, then maybe that would give you other implications. So the Ritva over here, the Ritva says that it's the difference between Kviyas and Aroi, that people are learning Bikviyas most of the time, the Bikiyas. And then when they want to go into more depth on something, that's Aroi. So that can be done outside. Very interesting distinction. Okay. So all of us, all of this and all of the details gets us to a fundamental question, which we started to broach a little bit yesterday. The question of what does the meshubach mean? Right? The idea that on the one hand you are putter from drinking water in the sukkah. And as we said yesterday, even the briskers don't seem to be machmir on this, because it's not in the stance, it's not in the form of their normal chumrah, where you're taking into account various shitas in Rishonim. Here there's no shita that says you have to. So it's not something that even Talmidei Chachamim have to do, as the Ran emphasizes. And yet, if you do it, it's meshubach. So how do you understand that? So, there is an opinion in Rishonim, some of the Rishonim say, we don't hold like this lahalacha, but that you could even make a bracha on drinking water in the sukkah. Kolbo discusses this, Meiri says this. Yeah, make a shakla for sure. But to make a leishiv basukkah, so where do you have such an idea that you don't have to, but if you do, you can make a bracha? Yes, sir? So it's the Machlokas Rishonim, right? According to some of the Rishonim, maybe. Grant your Bein Tam. So here, it seems to be saying that there is somewhat of a mitzvah status, even though it's not a chiyuv. So that could go to the question of, is it that the chiyuv is whether you have to go there or not? But once you go there, then it fits with the sukkah. that the patur is just in terms of making the effort to go into the sukkah. But once you're in the sukkah, this is a part of the mitzvah. Again, this is really a very interesting segue from our Osig Mitzvah Fatim and a Mitzvah Sugya, because essentially this is a question we saw there. Right? What does it mean to be pater from a mitzvah? You pater completely? It doesn't have any relevance to you anymore? Or are you pater just in the sense that you're not obligated to do it? But if you do it, then matov. So this seems to be the idea that it is a mitzvah. That seems to be consistent, as some Svarim point out, with Rav Shlomo Zalman's view. Rav Shlomo Zalman's position seems to be saying that once you come into the sukkah, there's a mitzvah here, because this is a part of Teshuv Kein Taduru. It just wasn't something that you'd be obligated to put yourself in that position. So to hear the idea that you can make a bracha, maybe that correlates to that idea. Maybe that correlates to that view. So the bracha part is interesting. Hi.
Is there, based on the conversation that we had about would we say that, is there a way to categorize this kind of situation? You might not touch the same, but we call it like a dvar mitzvah.
So it sounds like if you say you can make a bracha, so then you have to say that it's some kind of a dvar mitzvah. Now again, maybe our attitude is not that way, the fact that we don't make a bracha, maybe that says something. But maybe that's the machlokas, which is also possible. But Mishnah Berurah raises the question in terms of this whole idea of Meshubach. So Mishnah Berurah asks the question that why is this not hediotic? Right, why don't we say that if you're not supposed to sit in the sukkah when it's raining, then in that context, the Gemara says that Kalapater Menadavar Veoseyu Nikra Hedjot. So why don't we say that here too? What do we say that somebody who would drink water in the sukkah is doing something hediotic rather than mishabuah? Mishnah Berurah is this question. So in two different paragraphs, he has two different answers. So one answer he gives is that maybe it depends what's the cost. Now, parenthetically, you may recall if you were here last year when we learned Kedushin, we talked about a similar question, also asking from this source of Kalapatim Radavar Veosei or Nikra Hedjot. So the question comes up in general when it comes to Chumras, when it comes to things that we don't have to do. So when do we say that it's hediotic to do it? And when do we say that it's Meshuvah to do it? If you recall, we spoke about this last year, and we mentioned at least two approaches, both of which are here in the Mishnah Berurah. So one approach he gives is that we don't do it if there's some kind of a downside to it, if there's some tzad iser, if there's some way that it's inconsistent with the mitzvos, so then we don't do it. So what would be the issue here, sitting in the rain? What's the downside? Yes. Oh yes. Or you're making the tzar, especially on yontif. You have a mitzvah since it's yontif, and you're going to feel bad when people say about you. They're not even smart enough to come in out of the rain. So that's going to cause you anguish, or the rain's going to be a contradiction to since it's yontif. So maybe that's where we say it. That's one of the suggestions he has. That here, there's a downside. So if you had to eat in the sukkah, even if it's raining, okay, then maybe we'll say, all right, you got to do what you got to do. But once we say that you're pater, and you're saying, well, let me do it anyway, so we could say, well, don't do it at the cost of your simchas yontif. That's not wise. But if there's no simchas yontif detraction, like just having water in the sukkah, so then maybe that's a different story. Well, the other approach that he has is some relevance that we mentioned yesterday, that the question of, is it going to be a mitzvah or not? That maybe when it comes to a rainy sukkah, so then sitting in the sukkah is just not a mitzvah. But when it comes to, let's say, going to the sukkah in the middle of the night, like we mentioned yesterday, so So then, once you get to the sukkah, it's just as much a mitzvah as every other time. It's just that mitzdar could theoretically exempt you from going in the first place. So it might be that pater means different things in different applications. And similar to what we saw by mitzvahs, that sometimes your pater in the absolute sense, the mitzvah simply is not relevant to you. And sometimes you're excused, but the mitzvah is still there, and should you choose to do it, so then you're still doing something valuable. Yes, sir?
This goes back to the Bahamas.
Yeah, I would say it's evocative of that, and it's a different context, but that's what mentions a little bit of a good segue from that topic, because we asked a similar question in that context. Is there any value to doing the other mitzvah, which we thought winds up a certain way with the mitzvah in the Ran? So that same question seems to be here. Is there a value to doing this? So that's a question which we also said is a broader question than sukkah. It comes up a lot. Now, some point out, saying that we only say hedjot when there's a downside, it's a little bit problematic because the Rishonim uses this phrase in more neutral context, so we have to figure out if it really accounts for everything. But yeah, this is a topic the Rishonim ask in Maseches Kiddushin. Again, we saw this last year, that the idea that the Gemara says that Rav Yosef was happy that he was pater from mitzvah, so the person is blind, because he thought that he was getting more schar for volunteering, until he told him that Gadol HaMitzuva V'Yoser, Mushainu Mitzuva V'Yoser, that you're better off being commanded than not being commanded. So the Rishonim there raised this question of, when do you say that it's pointless, and when do you say that you're not obligated, but at least it's something? So just to maybe mention one more point here, one that we started yesterday. So we also mentioned the question of, when you say it's meshubach to have water in the sukkah, so what if you don't have a sukkah to go to? So we want to drink water. Is it meshubach then to not have the water at all? Or is it only meshubach when you have the opportunity to have the water in the sukkah? It's meshubach to do that. But if that's not on the table, so then there's nothing meshubach about just avoiding the water. So we mentioned yesterday, in the Sefer Pesach Olam Moed, quotes from Rav Shlomo Hyman, that there's nothing meshubach about avoiding the water, that there's a difference between bread and things that you're obligated to have in the sukkah and this meshubach category. That when there is a chiyuv to eat in the sukkah, then if you eat outside the sukkah, so then there's a bitul aseh. That's a real negating of a commandment. That's like a quasi isser, which is something we'll discuss in more detail next week. But if there's no chiyuv, it's just meshubach, so then not doing that is not a bitul aseh. So therefore, if there's no option to be in the sukkah right now, there's no reason to avoid drinking. I saw on the Sefer Atayr Shmuel that he takes a different perspective on this question. And that he defines things as follows. Says that, in general, the mitzvah on sukkahs is to establish the sukkah as your dira. So certainly that which is core definitions of dira, that you have to do with a sukkah. And when you eat something outside of the sukkah, so that also has this iser aspect to it, because what it does is it undermines your definition of your house, your sukkah rather, as your dira, because you're doing these things out of it. So that's where the negativity is. So to have water in the sukkah, so that's meshubach, because that does more to establish your house, your sukkah, as your dira. Everything that you do that's anywhere related to your living in your sukkah establishes the sukkah as the dira and is therefore worthwhile. So it's meshubach to have the water in the sukkah for that purpose. And therefore, he says, I don't know if you have to say that one point leads to the other, he says that on this voluntary level, so then the inverse is also true, that to have anything outside of the sukkah, detracts from how much the sukkah is defined as your deer. So even though when it comes to like water, it's mutter because it's not an actual act of dira outside the sukkah, but it does weaken the perception of the sukkah as your dira for this week. So therefore, he has this premise against Rosh Hashanah, and he assumes that to have water outside the sukkah is something that's less than perfect, and therefore it's meshubuch not only to have it in the sukkah, but to avoid having it outside the sukkah, even when the sukkah is not available. Hi.
Would the Adarshan will say that there's a difference though if you're doing it in your house versus like outside? So if I'm in the park and I drink water, I'm not establishing the park as my home or I'm not detracting.
Yeah, they're competing. It seems like that should be relevant. I mean, he doesn't discuss that per se, but it's an interesting point that if it's something that you're not doing a deer at all, so that it doesn't seem to have that that competing element. I'm not sure how much I'm so convinced that that aspect really exists, that doing something that, here, the other half of the equation, more, that when you have water in the sukkah, you're contributing to the fact that the sukkah is perceived as your deer. Having it outside, if the whole nature is arai, so then it's not really going to accomplish something. Because one could say, and I really think this is a little bit more compelling in the way he presents it, that yes, the same water that's totally okay to have outside is still meshubach to have it in the sukkah. Because okay, here's an opportunity to further cement in our minds the idea that the sukkah is the go-to place. But if for whatever reason we don't want to take that opportunity, okay, so then that doesn't necessarily detract from it, because having a sukkah, having water outside the sukkah, one will say it's just a arai thing that people do outside and doesn't do anything to subtract from the sukkah picture. So I would probably be more inclined to see it that way, to kind of take half of what he's saying, palgina divure, and not necessarily take the other half. Because that's the nature of the meshubach, then that part is helpful, that the reason it's worthwhile doing is because it does accomplish something. Whether it's actual mitzvah or not, maybe not. So you could say a Talmud Chacham who chooses not to do this, a Talmud Chacham who says that right now I'm learning and for me to get up and take my water into the sukkah is going to be a distraction, so then okay, he's got a good point, but that doesn't necessarily... Somebody asked me yesterday, I forgot, somebody this part of the room asked me yesterday, so let's say you're very far from your sukkah and you want to have water, so is there an Indian to walk a long distance to get to the sukkah? So presumably one would say, listen, that just doesn't make sense in terms of your time priorities. You could do a lot of other learning or chasadim or whatever in that time it takes you to do this. So it's reasonable for even a very medakdeh b'mitzvahs to say that here this doesn't add up. But when you can eat your water in the sukkah, so then the value that it has is that it further reinforces the house status of the sukkah. It makes the sukkah into more of a dira. So therefore, on the one hand, it's meshubach, but on the other hand, it's not something which failing to do so is any kind of an indictment on the person who's making that decision. All right, just to quickly recap, what did we speak about? So we talked about this difference between the Ritva and the Ran in terms of what the exclusion of Aroi is, and we talked about how that affects various things. We talked about the Shulchan Aruch essentially implying that all drinking can be done outside of the sukkah, and we talked about whether that's necessarily true, so then what does that leave for the sukkah? We talked about the Shulchan Aruch statement leading to the Mishnah Berurah's assessment that there are times when drinking is kvius. Shlomo Zalman's point that if you're near the sukkah, then you should go in. The later Achronim who say that certain types of drinking could be the kvius. We talked about the question of whether this idea of making a bracha going in. We talked about different opinions of why, when it comes to learning, we find distinctions about what should be done in the sukkah and what shouldn't. We talked about Shulchan Aruch Harav's unique position, that the difference between the Kezayis and the Kebetz Anyanta, if that could be done outside of the sukkah. And then we talked more about this idea of Meshubach. What exactly is the nature of this Meshubach? And the Mishnah Berurah has various approaches to when it's kedai and when it's not kedai to do something you're patur from. And this suggestion of the Atarah Shmuel of what the value is of eating inside the sukkah, even if it's just drinking water, and how he therefore disagrees with the opinion of Rav Shlomo Hyman that if you want to have water and you're far away from the sukkah and you want to be meshuvach, so it's not only meshuvach to drink the water in the sukkah, it's also meshuvach not to drink the water away from the sukkah, and that Rav Shlomo Hyman thought that's not true. Here the Atarah Shmuel thought that maybe that is true, that it is kedai to avoid doing that. And we mentioned why we immediately think half of the sentence is more compelling than the other half, and that we don't necessarily see why you should avoid having water outside the sukkah, but should you do it inside the sukkah, the value is that you further reinforce the kviyas nature of the sukkah experience. Okay, so we'll stop here. Who wants to daven for us? Okay, you got anyone daven for us?
Sure.